This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Follow the Money is brought to you by PropitX, and right now you can compete to become King of March and win free trips up to $10,000. All you have to do is download the PropitX app and use the code VSINMM. Go and get the PropitX app today. Again, the code is VSINMM. We go out to the Progressive Guest Line now to talk some golf, specifically the Players Championship. You can follow Jeff Seely on X at Cutmaker Jeff, and the Cutmaker podcast is out right now. Jeff, good afternoon. Thanks for the time, as always, pal. Before we get into your best bets for this week and guys that fit your model the most for TPC Sawgrass, looks like a little weather. I think, what, tomorrow afternoon, maybe into Friday morning. So how does that skew things for you?
Yeah, what's interesting, guys, is that if it does rain, there could be a pause in play, right? So I think a lot of this could level out, because if there is a stoppage in play and they have to go into the next morning, that's going to skew everything. So I think it's going to be firm and fast on Thursday morning, where it'll play the toughest, and then it could be a little easier to get in the afternoon on Thursday and Friday morning. So I think it's going to be something I'm building my handicap overall, but I'm not going to overweight it too much. Maybe, you know, a small percentage.
All right, let's start at the top. Morikawa, 25-1. Take it away.
Yeah, guys, I mean, I'm not a Morikawa guy in general. And honestly, I think that he's clearly struggled for the better part of the last two seasons. But right now, he's in as good a form as there is. And he's clearly the play this week for the price. I think, you know, at north of 20-21 and around that range, I mean, coming in on fire, the iron play is as good as there is. He's just a very straightforward, obvious play this week. So he was the first guy on my card. And the second guy on my card was Siwoo Kim. What was so fascinating to me is Tuesday morning, as I was writing this up, I wrote up Siwoo at 34-1 on DraftKings. And within the next 10 hours, he was 24-1. So I think that's what's even more interesting is, again, you got a guy who is a previous winner. He was plus 610 top five in the ties pay full market. Now he's in that 425 range. I love Siwoo Kim as much as anybody this week. Any model you run, Siwoo is worst a top five play. I have number three in my model behind Scotty and Rory. I've seen him as high as second and as low as fifth. He's played in this eight times. In those trips, he has a win and two top tens, never missed a cut. So I like Morikawa, and he's fairly straightforward play, but a little higher odds. I like Siwoo Kim even better. And again, he's gained with the putter 50% of the time. That's been his biggest struggle in general, is the putter. If Siwoo has at least putting week, he's going to be phenomenal. Okay. So I like Siwoo top five a ton.
You brought up Rory there. He's between 15 and 17 to win this thing outright again. But the back was an issue last week, and he had to withdraw after the second round leading into round number three on Saturday. What does that do to you in terms of Rory this week, and where do you think he's at with his back?
You know what, Mitch, it's a really good question. And he's not on my betting card for that reason. In terms of DFS, I actually played a little bit of him in DFS because I think that back will have him at lower ownership. So while I'm not betting him at least first or second round, I may bet him on the weekend if I see, you know, some good signs. Obviously, he can play here. The numbers drifted clearly. There was at one point, I think like a 19 out there on Rory. So I'm taking a wait and see approach in the betting market. And in DFS, I'm going to play few shares just because I think he's going to be extremely low owned relative to his upside.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Let's go down the board a little bit here. I think you had your eyes on Brooks Koepka, and you brought this up, I think, 2 weeks ago here on the show, but his number has dipped as well. So what have you done with Brooks, and who are you looking at, I guess, in his same range instead of him?
Yeah, so I'm actually at the official home of what will be Koepka Palooza 5, the Piper in Noblesville, Indiana here. So, and it's funny because Koepka we had at 100-1 2 weeks ago, and now he's drifted all the way to 45-1. I can still see a play on him. It was very good return form putting. He's always been a streaky putter. When you zoom way out, like 8 years ago or so, he was a solid putter. Gained 7 strokes putting his first U.S. Open win. Tee to green game was so good that even when he had off days with the putter, he could still finish T13 in tournaments. Now we're at the point where we're at an event where the putting doesn't matter as much. I'm very, very confident in his driver, which is going to be super important this week. Gained an average of 2 strokes putting, though, in his 6 trips to the Players. I think Koepka's very, very live. I like him, actually, if I'm going to play him as much as anything, top 10. I don't think he's going to win. I'm going to have a little bit in the outright just because that's my guy. But a top 10 plus 350 or better, and sprinkle a little in the outright in Koepka.
All right. And you want Goddard up as well. He's in that same range right now, and he has won on tour twice already this season.
For sure. And he's drifted as the ninth lowest golfer on the board from 9th to 16th. And he's lost a little off the tee, but gained everywhere else at Bay Hill en route to a T18. Went on a run of four rounds of, in a row of losing on the greens. Now we get him on his best putting surface. So you're looking for guys who can drive the ball in the fairway, have a good overall tee to green game. Goddard comes in 8th overall in my model, 4th in tee to green. I think this market overreaction is interesting and definitely going to take advantage of Goddard this week. My favorite way to play him is plus 170, top 20, and I'll have a little bit of an outright ticket on him as well.
How do you play Knapp after the withdrawal at the Arnold Palmer?
You know what, Paul? Honestly, I think that withdrawal has fed into this price. I mean, you have to love that WD if you're a Jake Knapp backer. 50-1 is a great price because I think we would have seen a lot of the same thing we saw with Siwoo, where if you would have played, we would have seen some drift down the board or up the board, I guess, a little bit. So I don't want to go crazy on Knapp this week. I'm not playing him in my main DFS lineup because of the sickness risk, if you will. But 4th overall on my model this week, 2nd in total strokes gained over the last 24 rounds. So I'm playing top 20, Jake Knapp plus 175, my core way to play him. And I'm having a little bit in the outright too, because I think he's extremely live to win.
Okay, even more down the board right now. And it's Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest, Jeff Seely, you can follow him on X at Cutmaker Jeff, and his podcast called The Cutmaker Podcast is out and available now for the Players Championship as well. In the 80, 90, 100-to-1 range, who are you looking at?
Yeah, so I bet Thigala a few weeks ago at 120. Now he's in that 80 range. He's found his form, and his price relative to his form is pretty crazy. He has 3 top 10s in his last 6 events. So we're getting a guy north at 80-to-1 with 3 top 10s in his last 6 events. Throw in a T18, T22, and T60, and there's a lot to like. Look, he struggled here last year. But in 2024, he finished T9 here. So a finish I would be thrilled with this weekend. Over the last 24 rounds, Thigala is 13th in total strokes gained and 10th in bogey avoidance. His longer-term form doesn't look nearly as good. But when you zoom in, there's a lot to like. I think this is a great price. Market certainly seems to agree as he's come down from 120 to 80 or so in the last 48, 72 hours. Even though his top 20 price is down to plus 250 or so, I still like it. I'm going to play him at that top two, that plus 250 market.
Okay. All right. You had an unbelievable call last week. Barnes almost finished top 20. He had that long putt that dropped him to 21st. It was 30-1. Is there a Barnes-type play here on a bomber?
Guys, it seems highly unlikely that my boy Tom Hollywood Hoagie, 310-1, is going to win the Players. But if I bet $5 on Eric Barnes last week, I'm going to bet $5 on Hoagie this week. And I actually played Hoagie first round top 5 at 25-1. Handicap is very similar to Barnes in that Hoagie plays well here. He's 4th in the field in strokes gained at Sawgrass over the past 3 years. Yes, he's missed back-to-back cuts in his last 2 tournaments. However, prior to that, he spiked at an event that he plays well at, the AT&T at Pebble Beach, where he finished T14. He's won that event before. He finished T8, the American Express, a course where he had a T6, a 2nd, and a T17 prior. Simply put, guys, Hoagie shows up here. He's never missed the cut, and he's 310-1. And his 7 appearances, his finishes are T3 last year, T3 3 years ago, T22, T30, T33, T54. Hoagie just shows up here. How about this? Top 5, ties pay full, 35-1. That's absolutely worthy of a piece of money bet, $25 or so. Love me some Hollywood Hoagie this week.
Okay. And what'd you make of Kurt Kitayama as well?
Yeah, no, listen, I like Kurt Kitayama. I added my notes here at the bottom. I mean, guys, listen, in the last 10 months, Kurt Kitayama, 19 events, 1 win, 3 top 5s, 1 top 10, 6 top 25s. He has number of rounds where he's lost more than one shot in approach, 0. Number of rounds where he's lost more than one shot off the tee, 0. And a time where you need a ball striker, Kurt Kitayama is a guy to file a play, top 20, maybe a first-round leader, like Kurt Kitayama, again, is another play this week.
All right, great analysis as always, man. Thanks for the time, and go get him this week, okay?
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
Appreciate you. Follow the Money brought to you by ProfitX. March Madness got a lot more interesting. ProfitX running King of March. You can win free trips worth up to $10,000 just by betting the tournament. Win 10 pregame spreads or totals across the 67 games and hit your volume goal. You're in and entered. Flights, hotels, wherever you want to go, ProfitX covers it. Every additional 10 wins earns you another shot. It's easy. Just download the app, code VSINMM, and start winning King of March only on ProfitX. Code VSINMM. 10 plays wins $10,000. Code VSINMM.
Have a lot of games right now in college basketball that are very close. Every single one being played right now within 6 points the way it looks. And a lot of them within a basket. We'll get you updated on the live betting numbers coming up. Paul has win some, lose some coming up here as well. And the Southland starts at the very top of the hour. I like a side in that game.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Follow the money.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Welcome in. Championship week is here. This show is brought to you by ProfitX. And right now, King of March is giving you a shot at free trips worth up to $10,000 just for betting the tournament. All you have to do is download the ProfitX app and use the code VSiNMM. Bruce Marshall, longtime college basketball handicapper and bettor with Wager Talk, and the Gold Sheet again joins us here for a full half hour to get some best bets on these games and preview some of these conference tournaments as well. He's on the Progressive Guest Slide. Hey, Bruce, happy championship week. I want to begin with this BYU and West Virginia game last night. That was a fun one to watch up and down the court. That's how BYU plays. Not a lot of defense, a lot of points. West Virginia is the exact opposite, and the Cougars are now. That number's down to 3.5 right now. Total is hovering around 141-ish. What are your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, Mitch, I kind of like West Virginia there. Now, they played just a couple of weeks ago in Morgantown, and West Virginia won 79-71. It's a little faster pace than West Virginia normally goes, but they are playing BYU, like you said. And that's a slower pace for BYU than what they would prefer. You mentioned that game last night against Kansas State. That the Wildcats just played right into BYU's hands. They let them run up and down the court. The bench was able to do his thing, scored 40. But really, you know, and I thought they, you know, I don't want to blame the refs, but I mean, the Texas Tech game got away from Texas Tech late on the weekend there. I thought Texas Tech had that game under some control, and BYU was able to get away with some things, and then all of a sudden they won. But before that, they had been in kind of a downturn here the last month, and certainly against the spread, they had not been good. And I think what the correlation was, the more DeBanza shoots, the worse things got for them. And nobody's telling him not to shoot there. Mm. And that's just the way they've got. They bought this team at BYU. They bought this kid. They know he's going to go to the NBA. Let him score all he wants. I don't think it's necessarily great for the team. And, yeah, I know they got a couple wins in a row here. But this is, like you say, Mitch, this is the perfect sort of foe to slow them down. They kept DeBanza in check at Morgantown a couple of weeks ago. He only took 15 shots in that game. He's been shooting 25, 30 in most of these other games. And that's Ross Hodge for you. He brought that defense with him from North Texas. Hunter Huff scored. He was leading scorer in that game a couple of weeks ago. He set all his three last year at UTC. I think West Virginia wins this game outright. I think they're an interesting dark horse there. We'll probably see them in the NIT where I think they could do some real damage, but not before they do some damage in Kansas City here. I think they're going to win this game outright tonight. I'd look for them on the money line too, but certainly plus the points. West Virginia for me.
Okay, excellent. Joe Lenardi has Indiana, the last team in the field. They're 6.5 tonight against Northwestern. What do you think?
Wow, Joe Lenardi. You know, he thinks he needs a passport to go west of Harrisburg. You know, he's kind of provincial in what he does. But I don't know. I think Joe, I don't know, this year, I'm usually all with Joe. This year, though, I'm not sure. So he's had Auburn hanging in there a long time. He's got Indiana at the edge of the field. I don't know. Indiana has had a tough go lately. And they did, you know, they've lost, what, five or six? Four of these last five losses have been by double digits. The one that wasn't by double digits happened to be against Northwestern, and that was in Bloomington. And Martinelli, again, big night for Northwestern, that one, 28 points. He does that all the time. He had another big game yesterday against Penn State, 24. He's, what, the seventh leading scorer in the country. And this is not a vintage Northwestern team, but it's not bad. And they, like we said, this is a very interesting dog here. You know, the pressure gets on some of these teams when you get to a conference tournament, when you like got to win to stay, like, you know, on the bubble there. And I think the pressure is going to be kind of tough here for Indiana tonight. I think this could be a very, very difficult game for the Hoosiers. And I'm not sure they even win it. Plus the points, wow. I will take Northwestern and hang on Indiana. I'm not sure I agree with Lenardi. I think they got to do some business here in Chicago to solidify their bid, and they may be out tonight. We'll see.
Okay. Oklahoma, 8.5 against South Carolina.
Yeah, the price is getting up there a little bit. I'm kind of on Oklahoma right now, and I have been for a couple weeks. And Porter Mosier not only has saved his job, I think, but there is probably a scenario out there if Oklahoma can make a deep run here in Nashville and maybe get all the way to the title game Sunday, where they could have an at-large case. I don't think anybody's going to beat Florida in this tournament, and I don't know if they'd run into Florida before they get to Sunday. But Lenardi might have one scenario out there mm-hmm. where Oklahoma could actually slip into the tournament. They're playing that well now. And Nigel Pack, talk about a guy, this is his sixth season, and he's had like three different college careers, K-State, Miami, and now this year at Oklahoma. And he has really come on lately and put up 20-plus in three of the last four games. And the transfer who came over from St. Joe's, too, in the backcourt, and that would be Xavier Brown, also putting up some pretty big numbers. So that's a pretty good 1-2 in the backcourt, and they are winning. Now, they did lose a game at South Carolina back in January, so they shouldn't be overlooking the Gamecocks tonight. I think this is Lamont, you know, Lamont Paris better worry because we're seeing coaches get dropped left and right here who aren't achieving, and South Carolina's whole program has really gone downhill the last 2 years. And I don't want to touch South Carolina with a 10-foot pole. I'll still do it with Oklahoma. I'd probably lay up to 10 with them tonight. I just don't think South Carolina has much. And Oklahoma, just on a roll right now. I give them another shot, sure.
All right, follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest, Bruce Marshall, and he's on the Progressive Guest Line, longtime college basketball handicapper and better with Wager Talk and the Gold Sheet. So as you were talking about South Carolina there, actually, it kind of reminds me of the game I wanted to talk to you about next, because isn't Penny Hardaway potentially like axed at the end of this year? Memphis, their power rating seems crazy high still. They have played Tulane twice this year. Both of those games were really tight down to the wire, and now Memphis lane 4 again tonight at most spots. What do you think of that number?
I would not lay it. I would not touch Memphis right now. My only question here is if I really want to trust Tulane. Now, they did play, like you said, probably last weekend they played that. Memphis finally broke that losing streak, but by one point it wasn't too convincing. And, you know, I'm not sure Ron Hunter's in trouble at Tulane. I mean, I guess there's a scenario where he could be, but Penny definitely is. I mean, if they lost that game to Tulane last week, I think Memphis would have missed this tournament totally, and they may have already made a move by then if that was the case. But they are alive into Birmingham. Having said that, though, this has been such a disappointing season for Memphis, and I think where Penny blew it this year, actually it was in the portal. When Haggerty left for Kansas State, effective trade. They got Sincere Parker back from Kansas State. He did not come close to that sort of scoring threat that Haggerty had, and McDaniel came in too. So McDaniel and Parker were not good replacements for Haggerty, and the offense suffered this year. Now, if Penny's in defense, he may be able to stick one more year if he can get a win or two here in Birmingham, because he did win 29 last year. So, you know, it's not like he's been losing there, but the direction of the program has been going down. He's in trouble if he loses this game. I tend to think they'll probably win just because I'm not really on Tulane right now. They've been sort of fading late in the season too. So Penny might get this one tonight, short enough price, but I wouldn't look for Memphis to go much further than today. Maybe one more game after today, and that'd be it in Birmingham for them.
All right. A lot of people are surprised with this line, ourselves included. The Patriot Championship game at 4 o'clock Pacific. Lehigh's the 2 seed. They are home dogs against the 4 seed BU. What do you think of BU 2.5 here after the huge upset beating Navy?
Yeah, I mean, this tournament, I mean, these games are all close in this tournament. So anytime you're laying points like that, I'd be a little bit leery. But, you know, Boston U is sort of interesting here. I mean, to beat Navy, I mean, that was a pretty good accomplishment to beat Navy, you know, the way they did. And for a team in the Patriot League to shoot about 50% from the floor, they rank among the nation's leaders in field goal percentage. That ain't bad. Chance Gladden, they got 3 guys scoring 15 per game or more. Gladden hit a 3-pointer at the end to beat Navy the other day. He's probably going to go in the portal somewhere after this year. And he and McNair, that is a really good backcourt combo for Boston University. I'm can't even think they might do it, because I'm not sure home courts mean as much. And they do play the Patriot games on home courts in the tournament. And Lehigh has had, they've had close games too on their side. And so, like I said, all these games are close in this league. And their top scorer, Nasir Whitlock, he is doing a C.J. McCollum imitation because he's been awfully, awfully dangerous. But I kind of like that combo in the backcourt for BU. And I think I lean a little bit to Boston U here, although I'm, like I said, a little leery to lay any points in these games, which always seem to come down to the wire in the Patriot. To beat Navy like that, Navy was really the class of this league. That said something to me about BU, so I'm going to lean a little bit to the Terriers.
All right, very good. Sit tight, Bruce. We got a couple more games to go over, and then you want to talk about 5 conference tournaments as well, and you'll be going to the Big West, so sit tight. And thanks to the emails and tweets, apparently I missed a brutal beat. Scoot Henderson hit a half-court.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yep.
He hit a half-court shot.
40-some-footer last night.
They were down 5. The line was 3.5. The 3-pointer puts it on 2 at the buzzer.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yep.
That is brutal.
And I think he made 5 or 6 threes last night, and he's like a 20% shooter, 25% shooter from deep.
It doesn't end.
No.
Man. Follow the Money brought to you by ProfitX. March Madness got a lot more interesting. ProfitX running King of March contest. You can earn and win free trips worth up to $10,000 just by betting the tournament. Hit $1,000 in volume. You've entered for the $5,000 trip. Hit $10,000. You're entered for the $10,000 trip. Flights, hotels, wherever you want to go, ProfitX covers it. Every additional 10 wins earns you another shot. 10 pregame spreads or totals across the 67 games, and hit your volume goal. Just download the app, King of March, only on ProfitX. The code is VSINMM. Code VSINMM. Start winning. 10 plays wins 10,000. King of March only on ProfitX.
More college basketball next. Bruce Marshall's going to hang with us here. We'll get into a lot of these tournaments that will begin either tomorrow or later on today. They're underway as we speak. And also, I want to get his thoughts on Miami Lane 7.5 tomorrow against UMass in the MAC, coming up on Follow the Money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah. This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Welcome in. We're live in Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino is the spot. Follow the Money is brought to you by ProfitX. And right now, their King of March promotion is giving bettors a shot at free trips worth up to $10,000. Use the promo code VSiNMM to get started with ProfitX. We begin the hour by going out to the Progressive Guest Line. Ed Graney does a great job covering college basketball, the Raiders, every sport here in Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and he is currently at the Thomas & Mack as he just watched UNLV in a crazy game at the end hang on to beat Wyoming, and that number matters to a lot of people because they eventually won by 3. Ed, good to talk to you. I think that game probably sums up UNLV in a nutshell, no? How good they were in the first half, and then what happened in the second half?
Yeah, you know, I'll say this, and mostly because it's the kid, Dre Gibbs-Lawhorn. They've gotten better over the year. I was at the Montana game. I was at games in November where you just said, boy, how did you lose to them? They did have injuries, but still, how did you lose to them? So I'll say that they have definitely gotten better over the year. They've played well down the stretch, but it was a tale of two halves, like you mentioned, that we've seen a lot from them. But, you know, they make the plays in the end. Tyron Jones, who's a great shot blocker, he had 6 today. He gets the block. They make the stop, and now they they get a Utah State team. I'll be interested. Maybe you guys will know, you'll know before me, obviously, what the line will be. But they took Utah State out twice,
yes,
and they blew them out here. So that's going to be fascinating to me what that line is after beating them twice and blowing them out here. And Utah State, you know, had the bye and they're rested. So
that's
going to be interesting tomorrow.
I have it. What do you make it? What do you think?
I'm not good at this, but Utah State's favored.
6.5.
Oof. I mean, and you know as well as anyone, it's all about matchups, and they obviously match up well with them.
Mm-hmm.
They won in Logan, which nobody does usually.
Mm-hmm.
Beat the doors off them here, so that's obviously a good matchup for them. So I might take the 6.5 until it's proven otherwise, Utah State proves that they can get the better of them.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. That's my thinking exactly. And it's one thing to beat them. They throttle them post-meeting. So what does this mean for the conference tournament? What do you think, especially if the Rebels can shock the one seed tomorrow? You have the Aztecs on the bubble. You got New Mexico on the bubble. Do you see chaos here?
I see chaos because I don't think it's a great league, and I haven't all year. I think there's a lot of teams like each other. So, you know, if Utah State wins, it could definitely be a one-bid league if they win it. And I wouldn't argue that case. I think they're all flawed. You know, I mean, if Utah State doesn't win and someone else gets them, obviously it'd be a two-bid league. But let's say New Mexico's in the bubble. San Diego State, I think, has to win this thing. I don't even put them on the bubble at this point.
Okay.
But I think it is I think it is chaos right now. I think anyone can win the thing because I don't think there's a great team in the league. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I mean, Boise's has a chance. Colorado State's played well down the stretch. So, you know, throw it in a hat and pick somebody out and you could get the winner.
I think that sounds
about right. Like if you, spot on. Like if you put every name in a hat and you drew it out for somebody and said, "Here, this is the bet that we're going to give you. They can win." You got to be like, "Okay, that makes sense to me."
Yeah, I mean, you know, UNLV would have to win 4 in 4 days, but you know, the way the league is, I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, if they can defend and they, you know, they don't give up 20 offensive rebounds every game, you know, they'll compete with people. So, you know, I mean, I think something weird's going to happen. I think someone, you know, unknown or in terms of, you know, people picking who's going to win this thing might end up winning it. And they want that because I think Utah State's in, obviously. So they want at least two bids. I don't think they're getting three. I don't think they deserve three. So they want someone other than Utah State to win because I think they're in. But who knows? I mean, like I said, you know, I take the 6.5 tomorrow until someone shows me that Utah State can play with the Rebels, mm-hmm. which is crazy to say. I would take the points.
What was your night like last night when you saw Bam go for 83, but then you had the big news with the Crosby trade that was off?
Well, I was scheduled to write the WCC final. I spent the entire night in the media room writing Max Crosby and didn't see 1 minute of the WCC final. So that was pretty crazy. That was just like, and I said before we came on, he scores 83. And in the press room, it was an afterthought. Someone just yelled out, "Oh, he got 83," and everyone went back to work on Crosby. It was crazy. You think about that and know what happens. And then, you know, you got the Americans losing to some Italian pitcher from Anaheim, California. you know, I mean, that was another, no one even thought of that or talked about that thing.
Yeah.
That they actually lost to Italy. No one even mentioned that until afterwards when you looked it up. So yeah, the Crosby thing was crazy. It's continuing to be a little crazy today. We just heard the Ravens GM talk about it. If you believe anything he says, I don't. About how crushed they are. And look, I mean, if you're telling me that they saw something in the medicals and we're already on Trey Hendrickson, that wouldn't shock me at all.
Mm-hmm.
That would not shock me at all if you told me that's what happened. And they figured, you know, the Ravens are not, they're historically, they're not giving up 2 first-round picks to anybody. So maybe they got a little buyer's remorse. They saw something on the medicals. They knew Trey Hendrickson was out there, and this is the way they got out of it.
I'm glad you brought it up about Eric DaCosta, the GM, because right now there's a quote on the TV for NFL Network where he said, "Nobody is more upset than me," end of quote. Yeah, sure, pal. I'm going to believe that, no problem. So what do the Raiders do from here? There's no chance they're going to get 2 first-round picks moving forward, correct?
They're not going to get 2 first-round picks. I've written it several times. I don't think I'm going to back off on it. I've always said they should trade them. I've always said it's a total rebuild. They need assets. They need draft picks. But the problem now is what is the market bear? And like you said, Mitch, what is the market now for him? You can't give him away because, you know, he's obviously still one of the best players at one of the most important positions. So you can't just hand him to somebody. So this is going to be the interesting part. And, you know, how fractured is the relationship? Is it completely broken? Is it just, you know, tethered in a way that, you know, they can, you know, go back and fix some of these things and have him be okay? Because if the knee's right, he's still a great player. And I will say this for him, knowing him and how much he competes on every snap and how, you know, what a great player he is, this could really put him over the top if he's healthy to have a great year. Because he was traded. He was in Baltimore on Instagram doing stories. He was a Raven, his mind. And then this happens to him and he has to go back now. This could really, you know, jockey him into some kind of great season if, in fact, he's healthy. And but again, 8 procedures in 7 seasons. You know, I mean, he's had his injury problems. He's, you know, he had a meniscus last year in the offseason. So you're exactly right. I don't know what the market is now, but I think there's a market for him. I just think people will think they have leverage now, try to lowball it and see if they could get him. And I don't think the Raiders will just give him away, and I don't think they should.
What a mess. I agree with Mitch. The league should step in because he's not going to pass the physical because he just had the surgery. But the other thing is, they're not obligated with all these deals and guys they sign now, right? Could the Raiders get out of some of these contracts they just gave out?
Well, they're announcing, you know, some's coming out each hour today in terms of who they're signing and who they just announced the trade for the corner from Buffalo. They just announced that. But yeah, I mean, essentially, until it's signed, it's not official. Now, I guess the question is, do you want to be that team after, you know, the Ravens look horrible in this?
Yes.
They just look awful in this. This is all on them. So do you want to be that team, that next team that goes out and you've already had a handshake agreement with a guy like Linderbaum and say, well, no, we don't want to pay that much. I don't think they will. I think they'll follow through with their agreements and then they're going to have to make a decision on Crosby, whether they bring him back or whether they try to, go out and get more trade offers for him. But, Paul, I don't think they're a team that's going to now turn around after what the Ravens did and said, okay, we're going to back out of agreements.
Okay, very good. Ed Graney, our guest, covers the entire Las Vegas sports scene for the Las Vegas Review-Journal on the Progressive Guest Line. Ed, we have a couple of minutes left here. Like, Mendoza to go to the Raiders is, like, it's minus 10,000, right? You're not going to make any money betting that because the cat's been out of the bag now for a long time. But if there is a team that falls in love with him that's down the board a little bit and they were to offer the mother load to the Raiders for that first overall pick, do you think they're at least going to listen to it?
Well, Spytek listens to everything, and I think he should. It's just like before the Ravens deal handled with Crosby, he said, we expect him back, but we listen to everything. That's what he said at the combine. So I think Spytek listens to everything, and if someone's offered the mother load, like you said, they'd have to consider it. They'd have to consider, I don't know how many first-round draft picks you're talking about, but they'd have to consider it. I think they're taking him. I think the decision's been made. They're going to take him. They're probably going to get, if it's not O'Connell, they'll get another quarterback to play a little before him. Spytek has said he doesn't like to play rookies right away. I don't know everyone who's still out there, but there are quarterbacks out there that you could bring in. If not, make O'Connell the starter to start and then have Mendoza obviously replace him eventually. Mitch, I think they listen to it.
Okay.
If someone comes with a mother, I think they listen.
Could that veteran starter be Kirk Cousins?
Ooh, that's a good one. It could be someone like that. That's a good one to throw out there. Yeah, it could be someone like that. Whoever comes in knows the deal. You know, once you're 0-3 or 1-4, the other guy's going to play. You know the deal when you come in. But if you need a job, and you know that's the only job out there, and they want you to start. You know, at least to start to help the kid along, then that's a great name. I didn't think of that name, but now that I think about it, that's the kind of guy we're talking about.
Thanks, Ed.
Yep.
Great job.
Appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate you guys. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yes. Well, this changes things. You don't have those 2 picks in your back pocket now.
I know.
If someone's going to offer you the mother load, you got to take it or listen.
No question. You have to.
The overwhelming response is the Ravens pulled a fast one on the league.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Boy. Oh, God. Follow the Money brought to you by ProfitX. ProfitX, King of March, gives you a shot at free trips worth up to $10,000. Flights, hotels, your choice of destination, all on ProfitX. every additional 10 wins gets you back in the running. Download the app, code VSNMM, compete to become the king of March only on PropitX. Get it now, download it, code VSNMM.
In Pocket Plays coming up next on Follow the Money. It's VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Follow the Money on VSIN.
Finish here going hardcore college basketball. Rocco Miller does a great job covering this sport year-round. He's a great follow on X, at Rocco Miller 8. Bracketologist, analyst, covers all these leagues. He's in town. He went to the West Coast tournament last night. Going to go to the Big West tonight. Great to meet you. Thanks for the time today. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Great to be with you guys. Good to be back in here. A little annual visit, and it's first time with you.
So yeah, yeah.
This is great.
Well, you really do a stellar job on social media and beyond that, so thank you for the time. I want to talk to you about this game because I teased it before the break. Like, Memphis is laying 4 against Tulane. That seems like I want nothing to do with betting Memphis. Does that number feel about right to you?
Seems like it should be a little tighter. They just played at the end of the season. It was an OT game, 50-50 ball game. Then you saw a two-point game the first time. So it's round 3. They know each other. They're basically playing tight both games. I didn't look at the Tulane roster situation, so I assume maybe there's a personnel concern. Check the availability report before you do anything, if you haven't done anything. But otherwise, I think it's probably a tad high. And it looks like on the screen there, it says 5 now.
Up to 5 now? Well, then there you go.
Yeah.
You're probably onto something.
Yep.
We had a guest on earlier, Bruce Marshall, who's been handicapping and betting college basketball for a long time. His exact quote was, "I don't know why Santa Barbara is favored tonight." And they're laying 5.5 to Davis. What do you think of that?
Yeah, again, I got to look at the personnel. But the thing is I know this matchup very well over the years. You know, Jim Les has been at UC Davis for a decade at least, and Pasternak's been at UCSB for a long time. UC Davis usually puts that offense into a little bit of a pretzel, I would say, different zone variations, and dominates the glass typically. I know UC Davis won the last meeting, and I would agree. I mean, I would tend to say UC Davis should win this game, but check the personnel just to be safe. But yeah, typically Jim Les owns Pasternak. Check out the history between those two.
Wow, very good. Patriot League final coming up in 20 minutes. The 4 seed, BU favored at Lehigh in the title game. Are you surprised by that? And BU off the huge upset over Navy.
Yeah, I mean, this tournament's been insane.
Yeah, close games.
It's a tournament of epic proportions with deep buzzer beaters. Lehigh had one. Boston U had probably the most memorable one to knock off Navy. Elite behind the back dribble to set up that shot, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say in this particular series, first of all, Lehigh is a great home team. I think they have a big streak where they've either won all their games at home or if they've lost, it's gone to overtime. And you have to remember in the Patriot League tournament, these are campus games. So I would say I'm a little surprised Lehigh is getting points. I would figure it would either be a straight pick 'em or Lehigh lane a little bit. So I think Lehigh wins this game.
Okay, yeah.
But it could be another thriller with the buzzer beater.
Right. I'm going to put you in charge. If you were a conference commissioner, I feel terrible for what happened to Navy. They didn't lose for 3 months, and they went 17-1 in the league and won the league by 5 games. Not good enough. You got to win 3 more. What's the best way to do this for a small conference when you put your conference tournament together?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because when you're in the summertime, you might know that you have a dominant team or two. And I think that's the time you could change your bracket all the way up until about the fall. If you know that's coming for the next season, you have the right to just build one of those ladder style brackets for the top two teams, get buys to the semis. I think that would be the kind of year to do that. Patriot League obviously cares way more about academics than brackets. So they're probably not spending much time on it. But in other leagues like the Sun Belt, where everybody's basically even, to do it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You had a 6-way tie for second.
Yeah.
And you lose that tiebreaker like Arkansas State did, you got to win 3 extra days versus the Marshall Thundering Herd, who won all the tiebreakers and got 3 extra days off. Unbelievable. So that one doesn't make a lot of sense from that standpoint. But I do think, you know, Gonzaga and St. Mary's in the WCC set this standard years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made sense for so – it's so perfect for that league because you know those top two are much better than 3 almost every year. And they should get rewarded for that. So I think you have to know your league. And we're in the era of the portal. So just like teams are nimble, rosters are nimble year in and year out, make your bracket nimble. You don't have to swear to a bracket style for the rest of your life. Go year by year.
You could basically change it then like every September or October if you wanted to.
Yes.
Any thoughts on the Big Sky title team game tonight in Boise on ESPN2? Montana with the season sweep, but Idaho's taking money up to 3.5?
Yeah, I do. I think it's been fascinating because the Idaho Vandals for most of the season have been a three-point heavy team. And in this Big Sky tournament, they've been attacking the rim like relentlessly, almost the inverse of who they were in the regular season. So, first of all, the best news is Colton Mitchell came back for the tournament. They're clearly playing at a high level. They dominated a good Eastern Washington team late last night. And I think Montana's biggest vulnerability defensively is defending the rim. So Idaho can just keep doing the same game plan, and I don't think Montana can slow them down. So I do like Idaho here. I'm a little surprised that everybody's kind of on that. Montana's the higher seed. Montana dominated them in the regular season. Uh-huh. But again, that was a game where Idaho settled for a lot of three-point looks, didn't make many of them. Tonight's going to be a much different game plan for the Vandals, but I do like them to win.
And here at Circa now, Idaho up to 4. Our guest, Rocco Miller, great job covering college basketball year-round. You can follow him on X at Rocco Miller 8. I want to ask you about a game tomorrow in the Mountain West, Thomas and Mack. This is a funky third time around because the first time they played UNLV went to Utah State as a 16.5 point dog, won outright. Then the rematch here in Las Vegas not that long ago, Utah State was laying 8.5. UNLV beat him by 27. So the number tomorrow is Utah State 6.5.
Crazy, right? Yeah. I mean, beat him twice by double digits. Clearly there's matchup issues. Mm-hmm. Gibbs Lawhorn was too much for them. And you catch Utah State in these kind of interesting spots because Utah State, you know, they're fundamentally sound. They're a great home team. But now you get them out of Logan. Played much differently out of Logan, especially in the last month.
Yes.
And you have the Jared Calhoun situation where his name's mentioned with Cincinnati. Cincinnati just lost moments ago. His name's mentioned for Pittsburgh. And you just know they've done enough to get in. So there's some distractions right now for Utah State based on that. Great opportunity for UNLV to beat them a third time, in my opinion. And obviously that guarantees the Mountain West a second bid no matter what, if UNLV can pull it off. I think we'll have a good one at least, and 6.5 sounds like the right move on UNLV.
Okay. Do you like anybody in the A-10? Every person we've talked to has said absolutely wide open, like 5-6 teams can win this conference.
Yeah, I don't think 5 or 6. I think we're probably down to 3 or 4. VCU and St. Louis throughout the year dominant, and then the Avila injury opens that up. And so we'll see if they can get by. I think they play the winner of the Fordham game eventually, but Dayton's playing really well. Mm-hmm. They lost to VCU at home on the final day. VCU's the team playing the best ball. So I would say VCU's the favorite at this point, especially based on the Robbie Avila injury. Dayton's on the same half of the bracket as St. Louis. I expect to see Dayton VCU in the finals. But we'll see. St. Joe's very quietly got the 3 seed, played extremely well, but St. Joe's was never able to beat the top 2 teams. And so until I can see that evidence, I'm not going to project that.
Okay.
Are you a level of concern that we won't get a Cinderella and we could have blowouts in the madness based on maybe NIL has separated the haves from the have-nots?
Yeah, well, I think it's just the reality of the beast right now. So many of these rosters at the 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds, these are elite rosters, most of them well over $10 million in spend. And you got to think about it. If you are, let's just take a team off the board here, the best player for Utah Valley, you're probably getting offered more money than Utah Valley can offer to be the 10th best player at a place like Arkansas. So just think about it that way.
Yep.
So like their 9th or 10th best player is probably as talented, if not better, than the best player on some of these 13, 14, especially 15 and 16 seeds. And it's just, they have to play a perfect game, 40 minutes, segment by segment, to pull off an upset. We saw 2 close ones last year with Robert Morris and Alabama. I thought that was fascinating. About a 37-minute game before it finally went to the Bama side. And then we saw the UNC Wilmington-Texas Tech game was phenomenal. But again, Texas Tech, too much down the stretch. We might get a couple of those. I think the 13 and 12, 13 fours, 12 fives should all be pretty good. You know, this Northern Iowa team, they are very locked in. They have a top 25 defense. They're going to frustrate the heck out of whoever they play in probably a 5-12. And with Tristan Smith healthy, they're 21-6 this year. So they took 6 of those losses while he was injured. And I just love the way that they're able to build stops in basketball. You get 3 stops in a row. We call it a turkey. And I'm getting multiple turkeys a night with Northern Iowa.
Yeah.
And Ben Jacobson and I talk about that. So I just think they're going to frustrate somebody, and I'd love to pick them. It just always depends on the matchup. But you look at South Florida, if that's a team that can get out of there. I mean, they have a high major roster.
Okay.
They have the athletes to get to the Sweet 16. So that's a team that, you know, as a basketball observer, I would not really call that a Cinderella. But with that 12 next to their name, you guys can, you know, help me build up the hype about Cinderella for them. And I think outside of that, you know, Liberty, like if it's them or even Irvine's got some flaws this year, I can't see them beating one of these top 12 to 16 teams on the board.
Very good. That was awesome. Excellent. Great to meet you. Thanks so much for making time to come down to Circa and hopping on the show here at the very end, Rocco. We appreciate that.
My pleasure. Sorry I was late. I'm glad we got to do it.
No, absolutely not. Have fun at the games tonight, all right?
Absolutely. Enjoy the games, guys.
Make sure you follow him on X as well, at Rocco8. Great job covering college basketball year-round. Hoops analyst and bracketologist as well. Stay tuned. Primetime next, taking you through the entire live betting night tonight in college basketball. Cashing out later on. And wake up early tomorrow with Dave and Jensen, VSiN by the books at 7 a.m. Eastern. Good luck with the bets tonight.